ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, Chapter 5, entitled Prahlad, the Saintly Son of Hiranyakashipu. We are on text number 7. Sadaryatam Balo Guru Gehe Dvijatibi Vishnu Pakshai Pratichanar Nabidye Tasya Diryata Samyag Vidaryatam Bala Guru Gehe Dvijatibi Vishnu Pakshai Pratichanar Nabidye Tasya Diryata. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hiranyakashipu advised his assistants, "My dear demons, give complete protection to this boy at the Gurukula, where he is instructed, so that his intelligence will not be further influenced by Vaishnavas who may go there in disguise." Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. In our Krishna consciousness movement, the tactic of dressing oneself like an ordinary karmi is necessary because everyone in the demoniac kingdom is against the Vaishnava teachings. Krishna consciousness is not at all to the liking of the demons of the present age. As soon as they see a Vaishnava dressed in saffron garments with beads on his neck and tilak on his forehead, they are immediately irritated. They criticize the Vaishnavas by sarcastically saying, "Hare Krishna." And some people also chant "Hare Krishna" sincerely. In either case, since "Hare Krishna" is absolute, whether one chants it jokingly or sincerely, it will have its effect. The Vaishnavas are pleased when the demons chant "Hare Krishna," because this shows that the Hare Krishna movement is taking ground. The greater demons like Hiranyakashipu are always prepared to chastise the Vaishnavas, and they try to make arrangements so that the Vaishnavas will not come to sell their books and preach Krishna consciousness. Thus, what was done by Hiranyakashipu long, long ago is still being done. That is the way of materialistic life. Demons or materialists do not at all like the advancement of Krishna consciousness, and they try to hinder it in many ways. Yet, the preachers of Krishna consciousness must go forward in their Vaishnava dress or any other dress for the purpose of preaching. Chanakya Pandit says that if an honest person deals with a great teacher, it is necessary for him to become a teacher also, not for the purpose of teaching, but to make his preaching successful. So particularly this purport brings some memories to my mind. When Srila Prabhupada was writing these purports to the seventh canto, there was a lot of book distribution going on, particularly in the Western world, and within the Western world, particularly in America. America was very strong at this point in time in history. The devotees were going out very, very regularly and distributing books, big books, small books, BTGs, in large quantities. And they were getting a lot of opposition. And there was some propaganda. There was bad propaganda in the newspapers, in the magazines, the media, all the various types of media against us. And some of the propaganda was true. Some of it was false. But what the propaganda did was made Hare Krishna a household name in the Western world. So, either good propaganda or bad propaganda, Prabhupada said, is all favorable. Because it makes people aware of the Hare Krishna movement. And Srila Prabhupada, he said Hare Krishna repeatedly in this purport. Similarly, in America in those days, Hare Krishna was being heard repeatedly by the general populace. They would hear Hare Krishna when they went to the streets and saw the kirtan party. They would read Hare Krishna in the newspaper. They would read Hare Krishna when they got a book. And there was a lot of the message of the holy name was being broadcast very strongly and in great quantity in those days. This was the potency of Srila Prabhupada. In those days, it was the tendency of the youth to rebel. We were not happy with the lifestyle that our parents and society in general were teaching us to follow. Work hard, first of all, be a good student, go to college, get a degree, get a good job, get a beautiful wife, make a lot of money, and enjoy. Because we saw our parents were not happy with this philosophy, so we saw some hypocrisy in this message that was being sent to us in the Western worlds. But because of lack of a higher message, we chose just a different message, which was there's the two philosophies. There's I forget the Sanskrit, but you simply want to enjoy now, or you undergo some austerities so that you can enjoy later, long term. Shreyas and prayas. Yes, there we go. Thank you. So our parents were teaching us this long term. You know, control yourselves, go to school, get good grades, and eventually, you know, you'll grow up and you'll be strong and you'll be handsome. And if you're a man, you'll get a beautiful wife. And if you're a girl, you'll get a handsome husband who makes a lot of money, and you'll have a very beautiful house to live in. You'll be able to get lots of nice clothes to wear, lots of jewelry. But you have to think about the future. So similarly, in Krishna consciousness, we are also thinking about the future. My parents and the society I grew up in, they were telling us to think about the future, which would ultimately take you to hell. That's real long-term vision. They were actually not teaching very long-term vision, because this one lifetime passes very quickly. When I joined the Krishna Consciousness Movement at the age of 19, 1975, I was a very young devotee in relationship to my God brothers. And I still am in relationship to my God brothers, one of the younger. And we have to learn that to progress in life, we always have to feel ourselves younger, subservient. And to make progress in spiritual life, we should never be feeling that we have reached some advanced platform and our business now is to give shelter to others because we are on such a high platform. The living entities that are situated within the material world are a great minority. And the most powerful living entity within the material world is like an insignificant spark to the flame of a liberated soul in the spiritual world. Our capacities as jiva souls is basically immeasurable. It's beyond limit. We are capable of so much. But the Supreme Lord is unlimitedly more powerful than we are all the same. This is the inconceivable potency of the spiritual energy that we actually are made up of. We can perform unbelievable activities and feats. But because we are covered over by the material energy, we are not capable of doing these feats at this time. But by simply hearing and chanting the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The ignorance gradually gets cleansed away, Tito Darpana Marjanam, from our hearts. And we start exhibiting powers that we did not know we had. And all of a sudden, we find that our life is going in a different direction. No longer are we going to hell, which means following the path of sensual pleasure, which is the basic philosophy of this materialistic civilization. The propaganda that if you want to be happy in life, get a good education, get a good job, get a beautiful spouse, and then you will enjoy, is a great illusion. The true path to happiness is Nayang Deho Deya Brijam Niloke Kastan Kamam Arhate Vidpujamye But Tapo Divyam Putika Yena Satvam Sudyad Yazmad Brahma Sokam Tanantam. Lord Shahdev told his sons, Tapo Divyam, you should engage in divine austerity. Not simply austerity like the students are doing, studying the books, passing the exams, getting the degrees to get a good job. That is also austerity, but that is not divyam, tapo divyam. That is ignorant austerities, because it's simply the education is centered around making progress in material sense enjoyment. But tapo divyam, divine austerity, is geared towards making progress in spiritual life and coming to the realization of your true spiritual nature, which has absolutely nothing to do with this material body, this material world, with your material family, with your material society, and with this whole universal creation. It has nothing to do. This is foreign to our nature. We are Sat Chit Ananda Vigraha. We are eternal, full of bliss and full of knowledge by constitution. And when we try to experience pleasure in relationship to this material world, which is what this body is made up of, its material elements, earth, water, fire, air, ether, that does not give the soul any pleasure. The soul is hankering to revive its eternal relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is what is generally understood. But there's also the relationship with the liberated souls in the spiritual world that we have a constitutional position of. We also have friends in the spiritual world. We have so many relationships with so many different living entities in, that all have their own unique relationship with Krishna, as we do also. So that is why spiritual life is a lot more than going out by yourself and sitting in a cave in the Himalayas or wherever you may go and performing some type of meditation. Because the highest platform of spiritual realization is you have relationships, eternal relationships with not only the Supreme Lord, but all His parts and parcels also. So the way we revive that consciousness is by relating spiritually with all the parts and parcels of Krishna that are situated in this conditioned world. And then when we do that by sharing with everyone we meet the message that is coming down by parampara through the disciplic succession, we simultaneously benefit humanity at large and ourselves. There's this one book that was produced by the BBT. It's called Preaching is the Essence. And there's a quote by Srila Prabhupada stating basically that this Krishna consciousness movement is perfect and complete because it simultaneously purifies the individual that practices it and humanity at large. This is not some type of selfish spiritual practice. This practice of Krishna consciousness has been designed in such a way that it benefits humanity at large. This is a definition of selflessness. So here, Hiranyakashipu is telling his assistants to protect his child. Of course, he is in deep dark illusion. He does not know what real protection is and that his son is actually fit to protect him and that he needs the protection. But this consciousness of giving protection is very nice. That's what this community here is all about, is giving protection from the age of Kali. It's like if you have to go out in a rainstorm, if you go out with an umbrella, a very good umbrella, and you keep it open, and then you can walk through the rain and you will not get wet. It's because you have protection. So, in the age of Kali, we require the protection, which is the sadhana that we practice regularly, chanting the holy names, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, associating with devotees, going out and sharing the message of the holy name with others, and giving advice to those who are newer to Krishna consciousness than you, and taking shelter of those who are more advanced in Krishna consciousness than yourself. There's a loving reciprocation. There's a lot of give and take. And the more you give, the more you receive. This is a principle of spiritual mathematics. It's not that you give, and then you don't receive. You actually receive a lot more than you give. So it encourages everyone to give in any way they have the capacity to give. The brahmacharis, they're going out and distributing books, preaching at the colleges. The householders, they're giving shelter to their children. They're going out and working and then giving some of their hard-earned money to maintain the brahmacharis, maintain the temple, so that which is maintaining the preaching. So everybody is engaged in giving. And whoever is engaged in giving is engaged in receiving. Because Krishna, He is not a poor man. He does not require anything from us. But it is for our benefit that if we offer something to Krishna, we take one step towards Krishna. Krishna, He takes 10 steps towards us. Because He's very merciful. And as we become purified, our hearts become cleansed, we take on this characteristic ourselves. And we care about the soul of everyone we come in contact with. And we desire from within our hearts to uplift everyone we see to spiritual consciousness so they can have a future, a real future, an eternal future. Here, Hiranyakashipu is simply thinking of his little society that he's entangled in, which is made up, even his name suggests what it's made up of. Simply, Hiranyakashipu is wealth and women, basically. That's the goal of his society. And Prahlad Maharaj is just totally opposed to this. And he is very strong. Although only 5 years old, he's completely rebellious to his father's philosophy of life. And as we read the Srimad Bhagavatam, he does not give in one bit. But at the same time, although he is rebellious, he's compassionate to those who he is rebellious against. He is not antagonistic toward his father. Although his father, as time passes, we will hear, tries to kill him in so many different varieties of ways. And it was ultimately unsuccessful. And he was killed himself because of these acts by the Supreme Lord personally. So similarly, we should also not be antagonistic towards the living entities that we are surrounded by who are antagonistic towards the practice of spiritual life and thinking like Hiranyakashipu that we are being misled and that we are not, acting according to our what they think is the self, which is the body, the self-interest. And gradually engage them in acts that will purify them. And when the living entities associate with the holy name or the message of the holy name, it creates a change. And it can be gradual. And eventually, people turn around and start thinking differently. And it's called the change of heart. And that is the change of heart is from a materialist to a spiritualist. Instead of endeavoring to try to make some arrangement for pleasure in this temporary world, you start thinking of what they can do to get out of this material world and reestablish one's relationship with the Supreme Being. So that's what this movement is all about. And the materialistic civilization, what theirs all theirs is about is the philosophy of Hiranyakashipu, as we are hearing in the pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So it sounds very logical, actually. Yeah, I mean, Hiranyakashipu is sounding very strong. He's has very convincing arguments and talking very seriously to his assistants that, give my son protection. He's being misled. Make sure that be very cautious who comes into the school so that they do not influence him into practicing, spiritual life. This is very bad for him. And so on and so forth. People are convinced in this material world that this is their home and that there is some pleasure here and there's some future here. They're blind fools. Because everyone has experience that their father has died, or grandfather has died, or great-grandfather has died. Cousins and brothers and children have died. All around us, people are dying and suffering and undergoing so many struggles in so many different ways. And we think, it will not happen to me. There's some future for me here. It's the most foolish proposal. This is actually what Yamaraj told. Yudhisthira. He said this is the greatest thing in this material world, that people are thinking that they're going to live forever, when everyone around them, all their relatives, older relatives have died. There's never been anyone that's lived within our memories 100 years or 120 years or something like that. And we think we're going to live forever here? That this world, there's some real future for us? That is called the greatest thing, Maharaj Yudhisthira said, that this is the illusory energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as stated in Bhagavad Gita, Davihesha gunamayi mama maya dratya mameva ye prapadyante mayamitang tarantite. That this divine energy of mine, this energy of Krishna's is divine, because it is his energy, made up of the three modes of material nature. are very difficult to overcome. But those who have surrendered to me can easily cross beyond it. So generally, we think that to overcome an obstacle, you have to become very strong. And you have to rise up and conquer the obstacle, whatever it may be. But in spiritual life, you have to bow down and fall on the floor and submit and surrender. So it is the opposite in spiritual life. One has to become meek and humble before the Lord and before the spiritual master. And it carries out and it through your whole life when you engage in surrender process. And it softens your character. It changes the way you deal with others. And you become an attractive person. You become a kind person, an honest person, a compassionate person when you bow down. But when you try to conquer over material energy by trying to gather as much wealth as you possibly can, by going after the most attractive or wealthy member of the opposite sex, by getting the fastest automobile that, which you can't even drive very fast here anyway. All these endeavors, they lead to pride, arrogance, conceit, harshness, envy. And you find yourself without any friends. Not any real friends. If you're wealthy, all your friends, all they want to do is steal your money. So many wealthy people in this world are the most lonely, miserable people. Because how did they become wealthy? Because they engaged in this endeavor more than others. And they got more wealth than everyone else. And got a bigger house and got a beautiful wife and a fancy car and so many things. And because birds of the feather flock together, all their friends are of the same envious, deceitful, demoniac nature as themselves, and none of them can trust each other. Always having to watch their backs, secure their finances, you know, lock their doors. They have to have guard dogs. They have to always be watching out that their wives don't run out on them with someone else. I was just reading in the newspaper. I was walking up the stairs to my room and there was a newspaper. Look, it's like a man just bought back his wife from a pimp. I mean, women are getting kidnapped from India and sent to the Middle East to be used as prostitutes. And this man lost his wife one day. She just disappeared in thin air. And somehow or other, he found out that she was kidnapped and in the Middle East. And he went and paid money to the people that stole her and got her back. This is the situation in the material world. You're always, when you're dealing with the demoniac civilization. So we know what we're up against. And we're like Prahlad Maharaj. Surrounded, even in India, by people of demoniac character. And if you're like Prahlad Maharaj and bow down to the Lord, but in a firm way, in a strong way, in a resolute way, just like the materialists, they're going after wealth and women in a very strong way, in a very resolute way, in a very determined way. Similarly, devotees, they bow down to the Lord and the spiritual master in a very firm, strong, determined way, but maintain a character of humility and respect and mercy and so many other divine qualities, because they are trying to conquer over material energy by surrendering to Krishna instead of trying to conquer over material energy to try to enjoy their senses. So this is the divine and the demoniac natures. So we have to follow the path of acquiring a divine nature. And it's a struggle, because the majority of the populace around us, they are engaged in trying to conquer over the material energy to enjoy their senses. And if you don't do that, and you say that that's wrong, they will be against you. And they may do some harm to you individually, and if you're, or and also collectively, like we have experienced in this Krishna consciousness movement. So I think that's enough. We have a long day ahead of us. It's very nice seeing so many people coming, taking their valuable time. So many people here in India, I know the work culture. You work so hard to keep your houses, your roofs above your head, and food in your bellies, and, you know, cars on the roads, and so on and so forth. It's such a struggle here in Bombay. It's so expensive, and there's so much competition, and it's nice to see people interested in spiritual life, because it is actually, even although in India, it is against the grain. It's not the general tendency here at all. The general tendency is to try to conquer over material energy to enjoy the senses, not try to conquer over material energy by the process of surrender. So any questions, comments? There's probably 300 people here, 400 people. Oh, there's a question, finally. Yes, Mataji? She asked, I said we should not be antagonistic towards people that are basically following the different philosophy of trying to conquer over the material energy so that they can enjoy their senses. Because we are saying that, no, you should surrender to Krishna to conquer over material energy, and not try to enjoy your senses, but to try to enjoy in relationship to the soul. And if someone becomes angry at you, you should not get angry back. But as described, Prahlad Maharaj, he gave his father a good chance. In two slokas ago, you know, his father asked, what is the best thing you've learned in school? And he... He said, "Oh, King of the demons, as far as I've learned from my spiritual master, any person who has accepted a temporary body and temporary household life is certainly embarrassed by anxiety because of having fallen in a dark well where there is no water but only suffering." So he gave his father a pretty good slap in the face there. And but he didn't do it in an antagonistic way. He didn't. It's actually in a reality, Dad. You know, you're. I really feel sorry for you. That's really, you know, your lifestyle just doesn't suit me, because this and this and this. All right, and why don't you think about, you know, changing your lifestyle, changing your perspective on life and what it's meant for. And his father got angry at him and told the teachers to, in this sloka, to make sure no one influences him in such a horrible way anymore. And so he went to continue in the school for a while. And then again, as we'll find, if you read on, again his father asked him. And he could see that his father was incorrigible. And he just went, "Listen, Dad, there's no way you're going to hear me. So just forget it." That's basically what he said. He said, "Matirna Krishne Paratak Sotoba, Mito Bibadyeta Griyavatanam, Adanta Govira Vijitam Tamisham, Puna Punastarvidat Charvananam." That you cannot, if you're determined to enjoy in this material world, in other words, try to conquer over the material energy for the purpose of enjoying the senses by acquiring as much wealth and a beautiful member of the opposite sex for your sense enjoyment, so on and so forth. You cannot understand the spiritual subject matter from, like, like he's saying, from me, or from a group, or from your own heart. It is impossible. You are going to be forced to chew what has already been chewed. In other words, this process of becoming wealthy and enjoying the senses, it is like taking, it's like chewing sugar cane, a stalk of sugar cane, and chewing it, and chewing it, and chewing it. It tastes sweet at first, but you keep chewing it and keep chewing it. It becomes useless, stale. I mean, just no taste at all. So we see that the most wealthy people in our society, they become to the end of what's possible to enjoy in this material world. And they become very frustrated and become very unhappy. And it's just a fact of life. So we should see the leaders of the materialists, what they're like, and understand that it's a dead end with pain at the end. Any other questions? Oh, another one, okay. Good.
You said in the lecture also that Krishna doesn't need anything, but we offer to him, and when we serve him, then we make progress, we get purified. But there are certain religious doctrines of people following a certain path who believe that, and they are very aggressive about this, that they believe that God doesn't need anything. So why are you people wasting your time in doing all these things? And you are offering him things when you are not pure yourself, and how can you offer such things to him? So how do we deal with such people? I mean, should we? Sometimes they don't even accept prasad because they feel we are not pure enough and what we have made is not pure. So how do we deal with such people? My question was basically that if somebody is very aggressive and antagonistic to what we are doing, whether we should just pray for them and give them prasad. Sometimes they don't even take prasad. So should we just leave these people alone, or we should just continue praying for them, or we should actually try to preach to them and make them understand why we are doing and what we are doing and explain to them the philosophy of Krishna consciousness?
Generally, words of advice require a receptive ear. And a receptive ear can be cultivated. Someone can be completely antagonistic and unreceptive and later become receptive. And just like Srila Prabhupada is actually glorifying us, you know, 30 years ago, who were going out and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books in ordinary dress and presenting a book and getting them somehow or other to take it. And then they gave a donation and we used their Lakshmi. So there's different ways of dealing with different individuals. There's no hard and fast rule. And a generally an antagonistic person with an unreceptive ear, you cannot speak philosophy to them. They don't have the ears to hear it. But if you can engage them in some service, somehow or other, then that will purify them. If they can hear the holy name by the Harinam, that will purify them. There's no one that is a hopeless cause, not even Hiranyakashipu. There's no one. There's something you can do for everybody to so that they can gradually become purified. Any other questions, comments? Yes. Can you pass the microphone, please?
Krishna Prabhuji, thanks a lot for this wonderful class. You gave one very beautiful point that even though there are materialists who are seeing the miseries everywhere around them and even thinking that I won't get this misery, even at least I am the exception, I'll be able to escape. My point is this, why is it happening with the materialistic people? They are getting disease, they are getting old, but even then they are thinking that they won't, all these things won't happen to them. You said that illusionary energy is working. So how is this illusionary energy acting on their mindset, acting on their intelligence and making them think like this? Means I have seen some people who were diseased few days back and then now they are claiming, hota rehta hai, it will happen. They will smoke cigarettes, they will drink, it will be a part of life. They are not realizing at all that they are suffering. How this illusionary energy working on them? Thank you.
This is what Maharaj Yudhisthira said is the greatest thing. That the cigarettes, it's just like so obvious, it's going to make you sick. But people think, well, I'll smoke the cigarettes and I will look cool and I will not get sick. This is the material world. This is the material energy. This is how it is designed. It is inconceivable and inconceivably powerful. We should have such respect for this material energy, how powerful it is. And in order to counteract its influence, one has to very, very sincerely and diligently bow down to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's just the way it is. It's the way it's designed by the all-powerful Personality of Godhead. And we can be astonished, but then we see it acting on yourself also. You know, are you free from sex desire? Are you hankering for wealth? I mean, I have these tendencies. I know. We have this struggle. It's like a battle of Kurukshetra within our own selves. Should we bow down or should we stand up and fight against the material energy? It's always there. And it's as stated in Bhagavad Gita, yato yato nishchalati manas chanchalam astaram tatas tato niyam yaitad atmani evi vasangnayat. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unstated nature, one must certainly withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self, which means the soul, which is eternally related to Krishna in a mood of humble service. Srila Prabhupada ki.